Chapter 8. The home of Dirk Pitt was not on a suburban street or in a high-rise condominium overlooking the jungled treetops of Washington. There was no landscaped yard or next-door neighbors with squealing children and barking dogs. The house was not a house but an old aircraft hangar that stood on the edge of the Capitol's International Airport. From the outside, it appeared deserted. Weeds surrounded the building, and its corrugated walls were weathered and devoid of paint. The only clue remotely suggesting any occupancy was a row of windows running beneath the huge curved roof. Though they were stained and layered with dust, none were shattered like those of an abandoned warehouse. Pitt thanked the airport maintenance man who had given him a lift from the terminal area. Glancing around to see that he wasn't observed, he took a small transmitter from his coat pocket and issued a series of voice commands that closed down the security systems and opened a side door that looked as if it hadn't swung on its hinges for 30 years. He entered and stepped onto a polished concrete floor that held nearly 36 gleaming classic automobiles, an antique airplane, and a turn-of-the-century railroad car. He paused and stared fondly at the chassis of a French Talbot Lago sports coupe that was in an early stage of reconstruction. The car had been nearly destroyed in an explosion, and he was determined to restore the twisted remains to their previous elegance and beauty. He hauled his suitcase and garment bag up a circular staircase to his apartment, elevated against the far wall of the hangar. His watch read 2:15 p.m., but his mind and body felt as though it was closer to midnight. After unpacking his luggage, he decided to spend a few hours working on the Talbot Lago and take a shower later. He had already donned a pair of old coveralls, and his hand was pulling open the drawer of a toolbox when a loud chime echoed through the hangar. He pulled a cordless phone from a deep pocket. "Hello?" "Mr. Pitt, please," said a female voice. "Speaking." "One moment." After waiting for nearly 2 minutes, Pitt cut the connection and began rebuilding the Talbot's distributor. Another 5 minutes passed before the chime sounded again. He opened the line and said nothing. "Are you still there, sir?" asked the same voice. "Yes," Pitt replied indifferently, tucking the phone between his shoulder and ear as he kept working with his hands. "This is Sandra Cabot, Mrs. Jesse LeBaron's personal secretary. Am I talking to Dirk Pitt?" Pitt took an instant dislike to people who couldn't dial their own phone calls. "You are?" "Mrs. LeBaron wishes to meet with you. Can you come to the house at 4 o'clock?
"Pretty fast off the mark, aren't you?"
"I beg your pardon?"
"Sorry, Miss Cabot, but I have to doctor a sick car. Maybe if Mrs. LeBaron cares to drop by my place, we could talk."
"I'm afraid that won't do. She's holding a formal cocktail party in the greenhouse later in the evening that will be attended by the Secretary of State. She can't possibly break away."
"Some other time, then." There was an icy silence. Then Miss Cabot said,
"You don't understand."
"You're right, I don't understand."
"Doesn't the name LeBaron mean anything to you?"
"No more than Shagnasty, Quagmire, or Smith," Pitt lied fiendishly. She seemed lost for a moment.
"Mr. LeBaron..."
"We can cut the fun and games," Pitt interrupted. "I'm quite aware of Raymond LeBaron's reputation, and I can save us both time by saying I have nothing to add to the mystery surrounding his disappearance and death. Tell Mrs. LeBaron she has my condolences. That's all I can offer." Cabot took a deep breath and exhaled.
"Please, Mr. Pitt, I know she would be most grateful if you could see her."
Pitt could almost see her speaking the word "please" through clenched teeth. "All right," he said. "I guess I can make it. What's the address?" The arrogance quickly returned to her tone.
"I'll send the chauffeur to pick you up."
"If it's all the same to you, I'd prefer to drive my own car. I get claustrophobic in limousines."
"If you insist," she said stiffly. "You'll find the house at the end of Beacon Drive in Great Falls Estates."
"I'll check a street map."
"By the way, what kind of car do you drive?"
"Why do you want to know?"
"To inform the guard at the gate."
Pitt hesitated and looked across the hangar floor at a car parked by the main door. "An old convertible." Old?
Yes, in 1951.
Then would you be so kind to park in the lot by the servant's house? It's to the right as you come up the drive.
Aren't you ever ashamed of the way you dictate to people?
I don't have to be ashamed of anything, Mr. Pitt. We'll expect you at 4.
Will you be through with me before the guests arrive? Asked Pitt, his voice heavy with sarcasm. I wouldn't want to embarrass anyone by having them see my old junk car littering the grounds.
Not to worry, she replied testily. The party doesn't begin until 8. Goodbye.
After Sandra Cabot hung up, Pitt walked over to the convertible, staring at it for several moments. He removed the floorboards under the rear seat and clipped on the cables of a battery charger. Then he returned to the Talbot Lago and calmly took up where he left off. At precisely 8:30, the security guard at the LeBaron Estate's front gate greeted a young couple driving a yellow Ferrari, checked their names on the party list, and waved them through. Next came a Chrysler limousine carrying the president's chief advisor, Daniel Fawcett, and his wife. The guard was immune to the exotic cars and their celebrity occupants. He raised his hands over his head in a bored stretch and yawned. Then his hands froze in midair and his mouth snapped shut as he found himself staring at the largest car he'd ever seen. The car was a veritable monster, measuring nearly 22 feet from bumper to bumper and weighing well over 3 tons. The hood and doors were silver gray and the fenders a metallic maroon. A convertible, its top was completely hidden from view when folded down. The body lines were smooth and elegant in the grand manner, an example of flawless craftsmanship seldom equaled.
That's some kind of car, the guard finally said. What is it?
A Daimler, replied Pitt.
Sounds British.
It is. The guard shook his head in admiration and looked at his guest list.
Your name, please?
Pitt.
I can't seem to find your name. Do you have an invitation?
Mrs. LeBaron and I had an earlier appointment. The guard went into the gatehouse and checked a clipboard.
Yes, sir. Your appointment was for 4 o'clock. When I phoned to say I was running late, she said to join the party. Well, since she expected you, the guard said, still soaking in the Daimler's lines, I guess it's all right. Have a good evening. Pitt nodded a thank you and eased the immense car silently up the winding drive to the LeBaron residence. The main building sat on a low hill above a tennis court and a swimming pool. The architecture was common to the area, a 3-story brick colonial with a series of white columns holding up the roof over a long front porch, the wings extending to each side. To the right, a clump of pine trees shielded a carriage house with a garage below, what Pitt assumed were the servants' living quarters. Opposite and to the left of the manor sat a huge glass-enclosed structure, lit by crystal chandeliers hanging from the roof. Exotic flowers and shrubs blossomed around 20 or more dinner tables, while a small orchestra played on a stage beneath a waterfall. Pitt was properly impressed. The perfect setting for a party on a brisk October evening. Raymond LeBaron got high marks for originality. He pulled the Daimler up to the front of the greenhouse, where a liveried parking valet stood with the awed expression of a carpenter gazing at redwoods. As he slid from behind the wheel and straightened the jacket of his tuxedo, Pitt noticed a crowd beginning to gather behind the transparent wall of the greenhouse, pointing and gesturing at the car. He gave the valet instructions on how to shift the transmission and then passed through the glass doors. The orchestra was playing themes from John Barry scores, light on the brass and heavy on the strings. A woman, elegantly dressed in the latest designer fashion, was standing just inside the entrance, greeting the guests. He had no doubt she was Jessie LeBaron. Cool composure, the embodiment of grace and style. The living proof women can be beautiful after 50. She wore a glittery beaded green and silver tunic over a long, slim velvet skirt. Pitt approached and gave a brief bow. Good evening, he said, flashing his best gatecrasher smile. What is that sensational car? Jessie asked, peering through the doorway. A Daimler, powered by a 5.4-liter straight-eight engine with Hooper coachwork. She smiled graciously and extended her hand. "Thank you for coming, Mr.—" She hesitated, gazing at him curiously. "Forgive me, but I don't seem to recall meeting you before." "That's because we've never laid eyes on each other," he said, marveling at her throaty voice, almost husky, with a sensual coarseness about it. "My name is Pitt, Dirk Pitt." Jessie's dark eyes looked at Pitt in a most peculiar way. "You're 4.5 hours late, Mr. Pitt. Did you suffer some sort of accidental delay?" "No accident, Mrs. LeBaron. I planned my arrival most carefully." "You weren't invited to the party," she said smoothly, "so you'll have to leave." "A pity," said Pitt mournfully. "I seldom get a chance to wear my tux." Jessie's face registered scorn. She turned to a prim woman wearing large-lensed glasses and standing slightly to her rear, who Pitt guessed was her secretary, Sandra Cabot. "Find Angelo and tell him to show this gentleman out." Pitt's green eyes glinted mischievously. "I seem to have a talent for spreading ill will. Do you wish me to go peacefully or cause a nasty scene?" "I think peacefully would be best." "Then why did you ask to meet with me?" "A matter concerning my husband. He was a perfect stranger to me. I can't tell you anything about his death that you don't already know." "Raymond is not dead," she said adamantly. "When I saw him in the blimp, he gave a damn good imitation of it." "That wasn't him." Pitt stared at her skeptically, saying nothing. "You don't believe me, do you?" "I don't really care." "I was hoping you'd help me." "You have a strange way of asking for favors." "This is a formal charity dinner, Mr. Pitt. You don't fit in. We'll set a time to meet tomorrow." Pitt decided his anger wasn't important, so he shoved it aside. "What was your husband doing when he disappeared?" he asked abruptly. "Searching for the El Dorado treasure," she replied, looking nervously around the greenhouse at her guests. "He believed it sank on a ship called the Cyclops." Before Pitt could make a comment, Cabot returned with Angelo, the Cuban chauffeur. "Goodbye, Mr. Pitt," said Jessie, dismissing him and greeting a pair of new arrivals. Pitt shrugged and offered his arm to Angelo. "Let's make it official. You lead me out." Then he turned to Jessie. "One last thing, Mrs. LeBaron. I don't respond to shabby treatment. You needn't bother to contact me again, ever." Then Pitt allowed Angelo to escort him from the greenhouse to the driveway where the Daimler was waiting. Jessie watched as the great car disappeared into the night. Then she began mingling with her guests. Douglas Oates, the Secretary of State, looked over from a conversation he was having with Presidential Advisor Daniel Fawcett as she approached. "Splendid affair, Jessie." "Yes, indeed," echoed Fawcett. "Nobody in Washington puts on a finer spread." Jessie's eyes flashed and her full lips curved in a warm smile. "Thank you, gentlemen." Oates nodded toward the doorway. "Was I imagining things, or did I see Dirk Pitt bounced out the door?" Jessie looked at Oates blankly. "You know him?" she asked, surprised. "Of course. Pitt is the number 2 man over at NUMA. He's the guy who raised the Titanic for the Defense Department." "And saved the president's life in Louisiana," added Fawcett. Jessie noticeably paled. "I had no idea." "I hope you didn't make him mad," said Oates. "Perhaps I was a bit rude," she conceded. "Aren't you interested in drilling for offshore oil below San Diego?" "Yes. The seismic surveys indicate a vast, untapped field. One of our companies has the inside track for the drilling rights. Why do you ask?"
"Don't you know who heads up the Senate Committee for Oil Exploration on Government Lands?"
"Certainly, it's..."
Jessie's voice trailed off and her composure melted away.
"Dirk's father," Oates finished. "Senator George Pitt of California. Without his backing and the blessing of NUMA on environmental issues, you don't stand a prayer of winning the drilling rights."
"It would appear," Fawcett said sardonically, "your inside track just washed out."